How much money are you directly responsible for?
The venture and buyout portfolios are about $3 billion each. So that's the capital.
You're responsible yourself with a team, but you are answerable to $3 billion.
Yes.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
We talk each week about how and where venture firms invest their money. We talk less about where that money actually comes from, the LPs or limited partners. Some of it comes from people with great wealth, staggering wealth, but other funds come from firms that collect investors' money. Let's call it a fund of funds, like the kind McKenna Capital creates.
Our goal is to drive perpetual returns and perpetual capital.
Well, isn't everybody's?
So we are trying to have intergenerational wealth transfer and growth. And so we do that with a diversified portfolio.
This week, Lara Banks of McKenna Capital.
Tell me how you pronounce your name, just so that we can listen.
I pronounce it Lara.
Lara, very yeah. good. Was there a Lara in your family?
No, my father loved Dr. Zhivago, and Julie Christie, who plays Lara, is like someone, you know, a lot of actually, if you ask Lara is what they're named after, especially if they're not Russian, it's Dr. Zhivago.
Lara handles venture and private equity investments for McKenna.
So I come to you as a sovereign wealth fund or as a family office and say, here is some money. Please put it to work so that this money returns to me on a regular basis, not a big score in 5 years.
Exactly. Exactly. So we actually usually have partnerships that are 10, 20 years long. The goal is for those people to invest and have, we actually provide a 5% dividend if people wanted to then use that for their foundation or their school. And then the rest of it is reinvested and continues to compound. And the goal is to then have that money compound for the next generation, either at that foundation, for the family, or the school.
Give me an example of, you know, I come to you with this money. And obviously just, you know, fictional off the top of your head, what sort of things would you use my money for?
So we will invest in a fully diversified portfolio. So part of that will go into what we call marketable. So public equities, we'll have a portion in fixed income. And then we'll have a large kind of component in what we call alternatives, which will be private equity, venture, and real assets.
And what's an example of a private equity?
And so these are funds. So we're investing in, some people might know, like a KKR, that type of fund. We actually try to focus our dollars into kind of smaller funds. So people who are investing in the more operationally intensive strategies, the goal is to then bring together those companies to then grow those over time and then sell those to either another private equity sponsor, to the public markets.
So you are putting my money in with other money. You're managing the money.
Yes.
You're not buying me a railroad. Scott,
we
I think
not.
Railroads are big. I think that's going to be important. So we bought you a railroad and that's going to give you a return.
No. So we will do what we call co-investments. So a manager who we're invested in their fund that has usually let's call it like 10 to 20 different investments. They might have railroads in that. We will sometimes then invest in one of those companies alongside them. We don't have any governance rights usually. There are a handful where we will sit on the board. But the goal is for us to, you know, really think about who is this person and group of people who are then managing that money and finding those investments. And so we're looking for the craft of investing versus necessarily a company that we're going to invest in.
What kind of return would make me a good, solid, middle-of-the-road manager? Not, you know, not your all-star and not somebody where you think, you know, we really got to get rid of him. But yeah, you know, solid returns, does his job.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the asset class. So in venture, it's higher in terms of the return profile. And in buyout, we're looking to outperform the public markets. And so it's hard to give you a number because it really depends on what the markets are in that period of time. But we're trying to create a spread, what we call an illiquidity premium, over over the public markets.
Your biography on the website says you're responsible for day-to-day portfolio management. What needs to be done day to day?
There are a lot of kind of small decisions in terms of amendments to different LPAs, but a lot of it is kind of relationship building. We are trying to know not only the people who are running the firms, but the people below that and the next generation of talent. We're always looking for that new manager as well. We spend a lot of time on what we call emerging managers. So people who might have started at a KKR or a larger fund and are now deciding that they have a particular kind of area of interest, a passion area, an area where they think that they can generate differentiated returns. And so they decide to spin out and start their own funds. And that's where we spend a lot of our time, is knowing that next tier of talent and then trying to help them as they found these new firms. And so we like to be anchor investors with them as they start.
Why? I mean, if you've got a big firm, KKR, you know, obviously established, trustworthy, et cetera, if somebody, you know, up and decides they're going to create their own place, be this emerging manager, why bet on them?
Usually that's where you actually see the best returns. The motivation of somebody who is kind of has a really cushy position. They usually have a very good salary. They have carry in these funds. So that's something they have to actually walk away from. So dollars that they've earned that they are not going to get if they leave. But because of that, they have this huge kind of like burning passion of like, I need to create something new to the world. And that motivation is just so highly correlated with stronger returns. There's also an alignment in terms of the economics. These are smaller funds. They're actually generally not making salaries anymore. They are fully aligned with, if the returns of these companies generate above what usually is a hurdle rate in these funds, then they get a portion of the profits. And so it's all about making those profits. And so that's why we see the returns in that space be just higher than others.
And if I were thinking about, you know, going out on my own and I said, Lara, this is what I want to do, I think I could do it. What would be the main warning you would give me? You know, Scott, be careful about this.
I'd say the team building and the management. A lot of people start as deal doers, and then they have a unique angle on how to find and help companies build kind of differentiated moats or growth levers. But when you start your own fund, you have a whole team that you're responsible for. There's a lot more management of the people, of the LPs. The kind of the operational day-to-day as well usually sits with that managing partner for at least fund one, maybe even fund two. So there are a lot of things outside of the investing realm that will take up a decent portion of your time. And so you really want to have a person who loves investing, but also has this desire to build and to be an entrepreneur. Because as much as it's not a new tech fund company, it's an ability for them to create an organization that outlives them. And so you do like to see that as well, as somebody who wants to think about something that will live on past their abilities to kind of create great returns.
Your 2022 letter to the investors talked about a soft recession. I don't think we have seen that. You know, the Fed, we're taping on a day after the Fed, as it sort of indicated, they may begin rate cuts. Although traditionally, no one actually knows when a recession starts until they're in it, right? Do you think the company got that right?
We thought that there would be one. I think most people did, and we have not seen a huge recession. I think in the tech space, you did see a slowing in enterprise sales, and that has affected some companies, just sales cycles elongating. But I'd say generally we have not seen a huge dip in kind of consumer demand for products, and that's usually sometimes a leading indicator of the recession. So we have not seen that as of yet, and it's something that we prepared for. But as I referenced earlier, our goal is to invest long-term, and so we actually are looking for strategies that can do well across different cycles. And so we're not investing in distress and just looking for kind of capturing those kind of short-term opportunities. We're looking for things that actually can survive a downturn, but also do well in up markets. And so it's not kind of core to what we do in terms of market timing. We're looking for great strategies that have kind of durability across market cycles with people who are long-term as well in terms of their motivation to be creating, as I mentioned before, like these longer-term businesses.
Does that mean you don't care about, say, that the IPO market's kind of dry?
I'd say, of course, we care because that does lead to nice distributions. But as we think about it, we invest about the same amount of money year in, year out. And that's the goal, is to continually invest a certain amount of money. So we have, we call vintage year diversification. So we don't know which vintage is going to be a great vintage. But we know that if you have kind of an even pacing across all of the different vintages, you will create a resilient portfolio. So you can think of the glass half full in this environment where IPOs are scarce, that this is a good time to be investing. And so, but then the other flip side of it is that it's not a great time to be harvesting investments. But we're always buying and selling because of this kind of perpetual nature of our capital base. We are always buyers and sellers. And so there are good times and bad times for both of that. And so maybe on the margin, a period of time is better to be a buyer. We're doing that. A period of time is better to be a seller. And we're also doing that.
Sandhill Road will be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You run the firm's ESG efforts, and that's environmental, social, and corporate governance. That has fallen out of favor in some groups.
It has.
But you're still committed to it.
We are. Again, we think about the long term. So these investments, we hope to have those be continued investments over decades. And so we think about things that are not priced in today. And we've kind of re-termed this kind of sustainability just because I think that is more in line with what we're thinking about is what is not priced in today that might be priced in? And how do we think about, you know, helping coach our managers on thinking about those externalities that aren't priced in the market today? And we saw some of that on the social end in terms of how do you treat your customers or your stakeholders, your employees. And we think about this in the environment too. You know, carbon doesn't have a price in the way that it might in the future, but we think that if people are ahead of the game and trying to reduce carbon in the way that they operate, they will be better served over the long term.
Right, because this is not just, you know, kind of a woke thing. This is good for a company overall. Over the long term, these standards will pay off.
Yeah. It goes back to actually the beginning of this conversation is that you're asking, you know, are we thinking about 3 years and trying to flip an investment? We're not. We're thinking about the next 10, 20 years. And if we were going to be holders of these companies for that 20-year time period, what would we need? And I think there has been a short-termism in capitalism. And so ESG and sustainability, as we talk about it now, is trying to think about this more in a 10 to 20-year horizon, what will be good for those companies.
And you do that from the very beginning. I mean, on the IC memo, you have already evaluated whatever it is you're investing in, their ESG or their sustainability.
Yeah, so we do have a part of our IC memos that discuss sustainability. We also engage with our managers annually on this. And so we have a survey, but we do have conversations with them because everyone's in a different part of their journey and how it affects their companies too. You know, what you would be talking to a venture manager about in terms of sustainability is very different than what you would do with a public equity manager.
The E in ESG is environment, which is particularly relevant if you're making investments in energy. You know a lot about energy.
Yes.
What do I not know about energy as a civilian that would surprise me or that I should know about?
I think something that maybe you should know and maybe you already do know is just the electrification of the energy ecosystem is really changing. And I think that shift from oil and gas to power a number of things, but obviously most notably transport, that shift to electricity is a huge shift that will occur probably over decades. And that shift is going to be material to, I think, the carbon input, but also just the ancillary services and how we interact with the energy ecosystem. So I think that's the biggest shift. We see a lot of managers trying to think about that as well in terms of building out new infrastructure, but also the software layer around that. How can we make sure that there's a better way of load balancing in the electricity environment? Right now, we don't have great storage. So if you have too much electricity, there's nothing you can really do about it. And that's what leads to a high price volatility in electricity. But I think there are huge benefits to shift that, both on software in enabling our ability to better kind of use the electricity and manage that, but also on storage. And so I think that's going to be the biggest shift that happens over the next kind of couple of years.
And do you invest in things that are involved in fossil fuels, or do you see that as something that has, when you're looking at a 10 to 20 year, you know, investment, don't make sense?
We have kind of limited the private investments in oil and gas because of that long-term kind of view. That being said, we do see natural gas as a bridge fuel. I talked about electricity. We're not going to get to all of electricity be generated by renewable sources in the next 5 years. So we do need a bridge to the future. And I think natural gas is that clear bridge in our view. And so we have some public investments in those companies.
How much money are you directly responsible for?
The venture and buyout portfolios are about $3 billion each. So that's kind of the capital.
You're responsible yourself with a team, but you are answerable to $3 billion.
Yes. So me and my partner, Brian Rohde, who is the managing partner, one of the managing partners of the firm, co-lead private equity. And we have a team that works on private equity and venture.
That ever keep you up at night?
I think that, you know, it's all about the partners we have and the confidence that we have in our partners gives us, you know, a lot of, you know, faith in the ability for them to generate strong returns for our limited partners.
Your mother, Carolyn, works in finance as well, back all the way to the 80s, which is, you know, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but it is a long time ago. She would have been one of the few. What did she teach you? You do something very similar. Is that intentional that you're doing what your mom did? Does.
Well, the funny thing is I remember as a kid berating my mom for what she did.
Why?
You know, I think as someone who grows up in a very liberal area where you think managing money is a negative for the world, you don't see the positives of it. I was probably a little flippant in what I would tell her on the quality or the value of her work. Though what we do is slightly different. So she works more in the kind of private wealth management. I'm more focused on kind of the endowment and foundation world. But there are a lot of parallels to what we do. And I think there is an element of seeing a very powerful woman, I think, was a great role model as a young woman myself.
Right. And again, particularly going back, I don't know how old you are, but she was starting this in the early 80s.
Yes.
I mean, you know, women who say, you know, hey, it's a struggle now. And I fully believe it is. I can't even imagine. I think of the movie Wall Street. You know, the only female character in there is Daryl Hannah. Mm-hmm. And she's the attractive interior designer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody in the bullpen who's a woman.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it was born of my mom wanted to be self-sufficient. She had this view, I think, from when she grew up of like, I want to be this woman who can do it on my own. And so she really was driven to do that. She also really loves her job. She's, I don't say her age, but she's up there and is still working today. And so it's almost a passion project for her in what she does. But it wasn't easy. And she says, you know, she has some war stories of some very difficult times with people at you know, as you would expect. And also just, I mean, she's a role model in that, you know, we talk about how hard it is a woman today, but she's like, I had, you know, two kids and I had a mother's room where I could pump. And she's like, yeah, I pumped like on the toilet in the bathroom with a hand pump, you know?
Yes.
So it's a very different world. But I owe, and I think we all owe a lot to that generation in terms of them blazing the path and showing that it's possible, and changing a little bit, even just like the dynamics in the environment. So there's still more room to grow, but I wouldn't have been here without her for so many reasons.
Lara Banks of McKenna Capital. Next week on Sand Hill Road, you were once named the 11th most creative person in the world. Do you know who got 10th? Who kicked you out of 10th?
Oh.
You do know that.
I do not know the 10th. I should know that.
Ganesh Bell from Insight Partners on his firm's new plan to keep AI on the right track. Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.